Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Brian Lynn has a story on the U.S. Army having problems recruiting new soldiers. Anna Mateo brings us the health and lifestyle report on work friendships in the time of remote work. Later, we present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
U.S. Army officials say recent drops in the number of people signing up for military service appear to be linked to traditional fears and concerns. Government data shows the Army came up 25% short of its goal last year to recruit 60,000 new soldiers. But Army officials have taken several steps to try to bring recruitment numbers back up. These include the launch of newly established programs, advertising campaigns, and incentives. One incentive pays recruiters an extra $4,500 per quarter if they increase their current recruitment requirements. One program also permits young new soldiers in lower positions to get a higher position if they identify a recruit who later joins the Army. Army Secretary Christine Wormuth said the Army has set a goal this year to bring in 65,000 recruits. That would be 20,000 more than in 2022. Wormuth said it is difficult to predict how that effort will go, but she added that recruiters will need to do all they can just to beat last year's numbers. I would say it is a stretch goal, she said. Guiding the Army's efforts are results of opinion studies, also called surveys, that seek to learn the reasons young people dismiss the Army as a career choice. The studies, involving about 600 people aged 16 to 28, were carried out last spring and summer. While the Army discussed the general results with reporters from the Associated Press, it did not provide information on the survey methods. Officials said the survey results showed that young people simply do not see the Army as a safe place or a good career path. In addition, many young people said military service would force them to put their lives and careers on hold if they joined. Some American lawmakers had partly blamed the Army's recruiting problems on the idea that wokeness is influencing the military. Wokeness is a term that began as a way to describe attentiveness to issues of racial and social justice. Some people and groups, especially conservatives, now use the word in a derogatory way to express their opposition to wokeness. Republican Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana has said the administration of President Joe Biden's woke policies are driving down military recruitment and retention. A spokesman for Banks said a top goal for the congressman will be to fight wokeness at the Defense Department. Banks and other Republican lawmakers have also expressed opposition to military efforts to target extremism, provide instruction on critical race theory, and other efforts to expand diversity. Critical race theory is a way of understanding American society that places great importance on how race shaped its politics and culture. However, the Army says that on average, only 5% of people involved in the study listed wokeness as an issue. About 13% said they believed women and minorities would face discrimination and not get the same chances in the Army. Major General Alex Fink is the head of marketing for the Army. He told the Associated Press the top three reasons young people give for rejecting military service are the same across all the services. They include fear of death, worries about war-caused medical conditions, and leaving friends and families, in that order. He said the Army is seeking a better understanding of any additional barriers recruits might currently see. Fink added that a majority of young people just don't see the Army as something that's relevant. I'm Brian Lynn.
Ana Mateo will be presenting this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Welcome to the show, Ana.
Hi, Dan. Happy to be here.
Your story is about work friendships. Can you tell us a little more about it?
I found this story very interesting. So, a recent study on work friendships found that working remotely, meaning not going into the same place every day, has made it harder for people to make close work friendships, which makes sense.
Why do you think that's important?
Well, the study found that workplace friendships benefit everyone, the employee and the employer. So those relationships are really important. And if people keep working remotely, will that continue to affect work friendships? Or will people adapt? It will be very interesting to see going forward.
I can relate as someone who started working here at VOA during the pandemic. The whole time I've worked here, it's been remote. It's definitely harder to have more casual relationships with your coworkers when you don't see them in person every day. It takes much more effort to build friendships online. But I will say, working remotely makes it more special when we do get a chance to meet up in person.
Yeah, I think especially if you are just starting off in your career, or if you are starting a new job, it can be difficult getting to know your coworkers if you don't see them very often.
But luckily, I've definitely made friends while working here. Thanks for coming on the show, Ana.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
You're welcome. Now let's listen to the story.
And now, the Health and Lifestyle Report. From VOA Learning English. Working from home has its benefits, but it also has its problems. One of them involves workplace friendships. Working remotely or away from an office may make it harder to form friendships with coworkers. In the United States, only 2 in every 10 employees Say they have a best friend at work. That information comes from a Gallup opinion study done in June 2022. Jim Harder is a workplace and well-being researcher for Gallup. He said, "We are seeing in the data that younger people in general are feeling more disconnected from their workplaces." Harder added that if young people are less connected to their workplace, they have fewer chances to connect with their coworkers. It may be difficult to develop those kinds of friendships that they might have had in the past. Also, he said, there is a difference in levels of trust among work friends. It is a lot more difficult to establish close kinds of relationships when you are more distant, he said. Take, for example, Crystal Powers. She is a medical records manager in the state of Wisconsin. Powers began a new remote job in February 2022. Powers is the only manager hired since the pandemic who oversees full-time remote workers. Team building has been difficult, she said. She has not yet met in person two of the five people she oversees. She said, "It has been more challenging than it has been in past positions to earn the trust in me as a supervisor, because they still do not really know me." She also has found it hard to connect with other managers online. Still, Powers said she likes working remotely. Harder, from Gallup, said that having a best friend at work has become even more important since the rise in remote and hybrid employment. For many employees during the pandemic, workplace friendships offered social and emotional support at a critical time, Gallup found from their recent study. This is especially true of parents, educators, and frontline workers. These workplace friendships also benefited employers. Gallup research shows that employees who have a close friend at work are much more likely to interact with customers and work partners, get more done in less time, support a safe workplace with fewer accidents, and create and share ideas. Johnny C. Taylor Jr. is president and chief of the Society for Human Resource Management. He said many good things come from work friendships. First on his list is worker retention, a company's ability to keep good workers. Next on his list is peace in the workplace. He said work friends can help to keep each other calm when disagreements happen. More companies, he said, are actively supporting workplace friendships. His organization has nearly 500 employees around the world. One of its programs centers around something that often brings people together: food. The organization buys lunch for people who invite a new person to share a meal with them. Taylor said, "We're trying to get people together who have different lived experiences, backgrounds, etc. The idea is you go to lunch with a stranger and make them a friend." Henry Crabtree is 26 years old and lives in London. He said that when you have close work friends, you're not only working with each other, but for each other. He was hired in December 2021 onto a small marketing team for a software company. That company has workers around the world. Seeing each other outside work, especially when colleagues are from other countries, he said, really helps develop these friendships. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the 1890s, the American people were deeply divided over the nation's money system. Should the United States support its currency with gold or with gold and silver? The question became the main issue in the presidential election of 1896. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell the story of that election.
Many Americans wanted a gold standard. They said the United States should support its money only with gold. A gold standard, they said, would keep the value of the dollar high. These people were called gold bugs. Most were businessmen, bankers, and investors. Many other Americans wanted the United States to support its money with both gold and silver. They thought the value of the dollar was too high. A high dollar, they said, drove down prices for agricultural products. A silver standard would lower the value of the dollar. These people were called silverites. Most were farmers, laborers, and owners of small businesses.
The debate over gold and silver was especially important because of an economic depression that began in the United States in 1893. Thousands of banks and businesses closed. Millions of men lost their jobs. Foreign investors withdrew their money from America. Americans who had money were afraid to invest it. Many people believed the Depression would end if the government issued more paper money backed by silver. President Grover Cleveland disagreed, and he opposed any legislation that might threaten the gold standard. He noted that every major nation supported its paper money with gold. The United States would be foolish, he said, not to do the same. It could not stand apart from the world's other money systems.
President Cleveland belonged to the Democratic Party. By 1896, many Democrats had become silverites. They gained control of party organizations in several western and southern states. They called Cleveland a traitor to his party and to the American people. They did not want him to be the party's candidate in that year's election. The Republican Party also was divided over the issue of gold and silver. Some members from silver mining states in the West left the party. Others remained in the party but gave support secretly to silverite Democrats. Republicans had done well in the congressional elections of 1894. They won control of both the Senate and House of Representatives. Party leaders were sure a Republican could be elected president in 1896. The most likely candidate appeared to be Governor William McKinley of Ohio.
McKinley was, in fact, nominated on the first ballot at the Republican convention in St. Louis, Missouri. The Democratic Party held its nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. The most likely candidate was Congressman Richard Bland of Missouri. A majority of convention delegates, however, were silverites, and they expected to nominate a silverite candidate. Supporters of President Cleveland wanted to test the silverites' strength. They demanded a debate on the gold-silver issue. Several men spoke in support of President Cleveland and the gold standard. Several spoke in support of silver. The last to speak was Congressman William Jennings Bryan of Nebraska. He had led an unsuccessful fight in Congress to keep America using silver.
Bryan spoke emotionally during the convention debate. He said he represented America's farmers, laborers, and small businessmen who wanted a silver standard. Bryan ended his speech with a line that became famous during the campaign. It called to mind the torture and death of Jesus Christ. Bryan said gold supporters could not force their money system on silver supporters. "You shall not," he said, "crucify mankind upon a cross of gold." With those words, William Jennings Bryan won the nomination away from Congressman Bland. He would be the Democrats' presidential candidate. He was just 36 years old.
A number of Democrats refused to accept Bryan as their candidate. They withdrew from the Chicago convention and held one of their own. They called themselves National Democrats. They nominated candidates for president and vice president, but they did not win many votes in the election. America's third party at that time, the People's Party, had a difficult decision to make. Populists, as they were called, agreed with silverite Democrats that the United States should have a silver standard. So some believed the party should unite with the Democrats to support Democratic candidate William Jennings Bryan. If they did not, Republican William McKinley was sure to win the election. Other populists feared that such a union would mean the end of the People's Party. The populists solved the problem at their nominating convention. Like the Democrats, they chose Bryan to be their candidate for president. But they chose a different candidate for vice president. In this way, William Jennings Bryan was able to run for president at the head of two separate political parties.
There was a great difference in the way the two presidential candidates campaigned. William McKinley refused to travel. Instead of going to the voters, he let the voters come to him, and they did. Railroad companies supported McKinley. They ran special trains to his home in Ohio. The trip was free. Each trip was the same. A band met the train and marched with the group to McKinley's home. McKinley came outside to hear a statement of support from the leader of the group. Then he made a short speech and shook hands. The group left, and another one came. On one day of the campaign, McKinley met 30 groups this way. That was more than 80,000 people.
While McKinley stayed at home, William Jennings Bryan traveled. He visited 27 states and spoke to 5 million people. Bryan explained that he had to travel because the Democratic Party did not have enough money to campaign in other ways. Bryan spent $650,000 on his campaign. McKinley spent $3.5 million. Bryan's main campaign idea was that the gold standard would ruin America's economy. McKinley's main campaign idea was that silver money would ruin the economy. For a time, Bryan's campaign seemed to be succeeding. More and more people promised to support him. Then, in the final weeks before Election Day, the situation began to change. The depressed economy showed signs of improving. The price of wheat rose for the first time in several years. Perhaps, people said, it was wrong to blame gold for the Depression. Perhaps, they said, the ideas of William Jennings Bryan were wrong.
On Election Day, it was soon clear who had won. McKinley received 270 electoral votes. Bryan received 176. Bryan congratulated McKinley. Then he told his supporters to begin getting ready for the next presidential election. "If we are right about silver," Bryan said, "we will win 4 years from now."
McKinley's election seemed to give new life to the American economy. Within a month, a business publication reported that buying and selling had increased greatly. It said demand for goods had led to the reopening of factories closed during the Depression. At the same time, new supplies of gold were discovered in Alaska, Australia, and South Africa. The extra gold increased the supply of money in the same way silver would have increased it. Taxes on imported goods rose to almost 60%. Under this protective tariff, American industry grew fast. The Depression ended.
The economic depression of the 1890s forced Americans to worry first about developments at home. But there were a number of international developments then which involved the United States.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.